Support for the Lincoln Project podcast comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who've switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/Lincoln. That's odoo.com/Lincoln. Odoo, modern management made simple.
Hey everyone, it's Reed. Before we get started, this month the Lincoln Project is going to be dedicating itself and our energy to making sure that Americans across the country know the good job that Joe Biden is doing on behalf of the American people and on behalf of the United States. I hope you'll tune in to our work and share the content and materials we're putting out with your friends and neighbors. Guys, the next 14 months are as crucial a time as we've seen in our living memory. Go to lincolnproject.us or jointheunion.us to get involved. And now, on with the show.
Welcome back to the Lincoln Project. I'm your host, Reed Galen. Today, I'm joined by Michael Steele, former Lieutenant Governor of Maryland, former chairman of the Republican National Committee, current political analyst for MSNBC, and host of the Michael Steele Podcast, available wherever fine podcasts are found. Today, he's coming to us from the great state of Maryland. Michael, welcome back.
Hey, Reed, it's good to see you, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well, and I hope you are as well. It's been a while, so we have much to catch up on, but I want to start with this. This morning, as we're recording this, I was having a conversation with an old friend of mine. This person is associated with a Republican candidate whose name is not Donald Trump. And the scuttlebutt within the non-Trump candidate world is that, and you're a former chairman of the RNC, is that the RNC has completely cooked the primary for Trump. That there is a reason why the first debate was in Milwaukee, the second debate is in California, the third debate is in Miami, Florida, right? That gets you in November, and not one person has seen these collected candidates on a stage together in states like Iowa or New Hampshire. They also understand over there at the RNC that Trump doesn't want to be on the stage with the likes of Chris Christie and Mike Pence. And the theory is that they will ratchet up the debate requirements so high that very few, if any, candidates that Trump doesn't like would be available to be on a stage should he want to join, although we also hear that he has no interest in doing so. So give me a sense, like, is that what you hear? Is that what you see? And if this is the case, then like, why A, aren't these candidates saying so? And B, if they know it, why are they doing it anyway?
It's a fascinating example of just how feckless and leaderless these individuals are. There's not a leader among them who's willing to really brace up against the system and try to deconstruct it the way Donald Trump has deconstructed the Republican Party. In other words, to put their imprimatur on it, to take control of it. Donald Trump is arguably still the titular head of the party. Why? Because he's the most recent former president. But one of these individuals wants to be the next nominee. And at some point, you have to begin to show that you have the kahunas to be that individual. And so when you have a system that is geared towards protecting, you know, the twice impeached, 91 times indicted, former also felon president because he was convicted of sexual assault in the state of New York, if you're not willing to take that barrier down out of the way, then you're not ready to do this game. The system is designed to go to the winner of the spoils. And these individuals are handing the spoils, Reed, back to Donald Trump, which is amazing. And it's the reason why when I was national chairman, man, I did not want to play the reindeer game anymore of Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, which, and then we got to add Nevada. But before it was just those three states, particularly starting in a place like Iowa, but you're not debating there. You're not holding big national events there. If Iowa was so damned important, I would think you would be in that backyard with all of these candidates. So you begin to see how the party is sort of beholden to the old rules in terms of how they're going to process the election or the primary, but then also beholden still to Donald Trump in setting these arbitrary bars like, oh, you got to sign this dumbass oath to say that you will support the nominee, and everybody knows there's only one person that's for.
Let me ask you this, because we were talking a little bit this morning about the idea of this magical thinking that you probably have to endure as much, if not more than anyone, of somehow Trump won't be the nominee, that somehow some magical fairy is going to come down and rescue the Republican Party from what it's become, when in national surveys, a combination of Trump, DeSantis, and Vivek Ramaswamy gets somewhere like 80%. So tell me exactly why there is this continuing fiction that people live by that somehow Trump won't be the nominee.
It really is the ultimate in people not only BSing themselves, but then taking their head and shoving it up their own behind. Because the fact that Vivek Ramaswamy is anywhere near the top 100 of potential candidates for the United States presidency tells you all you need to know about the internal rot of the Republican National Committee, the Republican Party at the grassroots level, that these idiots would sit there and think you could get some sweet-talking, fast-talking, jive-talking used car salesman to talk you into making him the nominee of your party, to me, is just mind-numbingly, explosively stupid. Having said that, it tells you also exactly the nature of the problem that the country faces, that there is a larger swath of Americans out there who are willing to buy into this bullshit to make this kind of thing even a possibility. The fact that you and I, seasoned veterans of politics, I don't care what party, we know the game, we've been in the game, we have fought against the game, we fought with the game. We know exactly, in one sense, at the end of the day, regardless of where we stood, we're trying to make the thing better than it was. That's not what the politics is today. It is to tear the thing down and to use any means necessary to do that. And I think a lot of folks are buying into this sort of hapless view of America that, well, I'm not getting mine, and all these woke people this and transgender that, and black people don't have history, and you sit there and you scratch your head and go, well, how do you think this ends? How do you think this ends? If Trump and Vivek Swamy are the 1-2 in places like New Hampshire, where do you think this goes? And so for me, at least, it charges me and my batteries in a way that make me want to fight louder and harder to sort of have that moonstruck moment where you smack the shit out of America and say, wake the hell up, you know? And that's what you guys do at Lincoln Project. You've been doing it well for a long time now, but I fear you need to probably use both hands to start smacking people. This is where we are.
You know, I was thinking about this earlier today, you know, and reading Jeffrey Goldberg's article in The Atlantic about General Mark Milley, who I think in just a couple of days is going to retire as chairman of the Joint Chiefs and spent 2 years under Trump in that. And Milley says a couple of things like, if Trump gets reelected, there's a list and I'm at the top of it, which I think we can relate to, unfortunately. But then, not to be outdone, Trump says, oh, yeah, I'd execute him if I had the chance. And so I think back to when I was a kid, my parents used to ship me to my grandmother's house in Ohio, right? And one summer, we had a real life tornado come through the neighborhood, tore down 3 trees in her yard. But before it happened, and Michael, you've seen this, you know, when that thunderstorm is coming or whatever's coming, and there's a wall of black, right? The black sky, sometimes it's even green. It's got this weird tinge, and you don't know where it's going exactly, and you don't know what exactly it's going to do, but you know it's coming toward you, and you know no matter what, it's likely to have a bad outcome. And I feel like that's what we're facing, not to get too metaphorical on you. And no one is willing to even see that the sky is cloudy. Not no one, but not enough people are willing to see that the sky is cloudy.
That is such a great encapsulation of where we find ourselves 13 months out from the next presidential election. The reality is folks are blindly walking through this. And here's the thing that, for me, makes your point so exceptionally well, was the response of people who say, that, you know, it's not as bad. And I want to pull up real quick because it really, it just for me, Reed, just reeks of the challenge and the dangers that we have. So you had Governor Chris Sununu of New Hampshire tweet out, quote, "Trump's too dumb to be a danger to democracy. Let's not give him that much credit. I want everyone to relax. It's all going to work out." He says, "We survived the Civil War, McCarthyism, 1968, 9/11, and even January 6th. Asshole leaders come and go, but our systems stand strong." I read that four times, because I couldn't believe just how asinine and ass backwards the thinking was. After I deleted the first four tweets that I was going to send out, I ended with the response that said, "The danger here lies in the sentiment that we should relax. At those critical times Governor Sununu refers to, the last thing the citizens of our country did was relax. A dumb person can be dangerous too. Hello, January 6th, right? We had a whole lot of dumb people show up in the Capitol. Our institutions are not strong because Trump weakened them. Meh is not an option." And that, for me, is the core of what we're fighting right now. People thinking, oh, it can't get worse than it already is. Just relax. People are not going to put Donald Trump back in power. Did you see the latest national polling having him tied with Joe Biden? What do you want to come out of this thing if you're that blind to the realities that you're sitting here thinking that Donald Trump is not going to continue to manipulate the outcome that he ultimately wants and we have nothing to worry about? Just relax.
Well, let's be clear, too, with a guy like Sununu in New Hampshire, if his last name was Smith or Jones, he wouldn't be governor of New Hampshire. He's the ultimate New Hampshire Nepo baby, right? Like, let's be clear about that, right? Like, there's only one reason why he's governor of New Hampshire, and it has very little to do with him.
Right.
Right? So, you know, like that speaks to you. But it also speaks to the idea, too, exactly to your point, right? The Civil War, 600,000 people died, right? And it just goes to show you, I mean, listen, Michael, we could do a whole episode on, like, the successful example of the GOP and the right-wing conservatives erasing American history,
yes,
right? Or rewriting it in their own way and nobody really doing much about it. But I guess my question is this too, is that, yes, okay, there are the Republicans and there are those people who you talk about, you know, like, I don't like woke and I don't like this and, you know, I don't really like Trump, but Biden's a communist and all the other stuff. But there seems to be too on the Democratic side, which, listen, you and I have probably spent more time around Democrats in the last few years than we ever thought we would. And, you know, you talk about the moonstruck moment, which is such a brilliant way to put it, which is like, well, now they're panicking. Now it's like, okay, well, really, who's going to take on Joe Biden? Because Joe Biden can't do it. And I'm thinking to myself, like, do you remember 1980 and Teddy Kennedy and Jimmy Carter? Do you remember 1992 and Pat Buchanan and George H.W. Bush? Do you know what happens when a sitting president is damaged in a primary? I mean, Johnson knew it was going to happen in 68, right? It happened to him and he dropped out. And so there's a part of me, too, that says, you know, more often than not in life, you don't get the best of two choices. You get the choices you have, and you make the best decision based on those choices and the best possible outcome. But now it's like Democrats, you know, they say that Republicans get in line, Democrats fall in love, whatever it is, right? Fall in line, fall in love. And, you know, Joe Biden's not a young Bill Clinton. He's not a young Barack Obama. He's an old Joe Biden, but like he does the job. He's done just about anything any American could ask for. And if there's any Democrat who's like he hasn't done enough, it's because they lived way out on the edge and no one's ever going to give them what they want because they're so far out there. But what is it about this sort of gnashing of teeth and hand-wringing and being unwilling or unable to say enough is enough? Like, he's our guy. He's going to be our guy. Like, we got to ride or die now.
So if you want to know why Joe Biden is at 56% job disapproval, and 72% of Americans are dissatisfied with the economy, you just put your finger on it. Because all the Democrats have done since January of 2021 is gnash their teeth and argue over silly shit that doesn't mean anything to anybody. We spent 18 months, Reed, talking about what? Filibuster. And American people are trying to figure out, well, who's Phil and Buster? What did they do? And then, right. Then they spent, within that time, beating up Joe Manchin and Sinema. And people are thinking, well, is that like, you know, Cinnamon? I mean, what are we talking about here? You've connected people to your administration the wrong way by not telling people the things that you have done and are doing that have been of benefit to them. You've wasted their time. And so now you've allowed your opponents, who don't give a rat's ass about any of this, who want to burn it all down, the excuse and the opportunity now to go back and to say, he's old, he's tired, he's a communist, the country's going to hell in a handbasket, they're overrunning our borders, the economy sucks, et cetera, et cetera. And so with no countervailing narrative, what do you think people begin to believe after 18, 19, 20, 25 months? They begin to believe what everyone's saying about you. It's not hard. And so here we sit now on the cusp of the next election. These numbers I just gave you are real. Out today, 75% of people think the economy sucks. I'm like, dude, do you know what inflation was 8 months ago, a year ago? Do you know what gas prices were when you were trying to go see grandma last summer? But yet and still, Reed, they went. They gassed their cars up despite paying $5, $6, $7, $8 a gallon in winter. People didn't cut back on their vacations. Why? Because they were making more money on their jobs. Yeah, they had to spend more, but they had a little bit more to spend. And so who owns that narrative? Everyone is looking at everybody else going, oh, life is hard for them, therefore the economy sucks. Well, how's it going for you? Oh, I'm doing fine.
Support for the Lincoln Project podcast comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who've switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/Lincoln. That's odoo.com/Lincoln. Odoo, modern management made simple.
Let me ask you a question too, because I know you're on MSNBC a lot. And, you know, Rick likes to say that whether or not it's Fox or OANN or Trump himself, that the conservative, I don't even want to call it conservative, that's the wrong word, the MAGA right-wing media has become the normative force in information in this country, which is eventually the mainstream media or talking heads will adopt whatever it is they're saying. Is it just because they're saying so much of it? Is it because no one is able to push back on it? Like, why do you think that ultimately so much of what you're seeing, like, you know, Biden's age, all this other stuff, the border is a disaster, everything else, the headline writers, the New York Times, I mean, why is it that, you know, ultimately whatever the wackos put out, the normies pick up?
I think you put your finger on two things that pop right out of the gate, as you just noted. But the other couple of pieces are they're lazy. The news is now about profit, not news, not journalism. It's about clickbait, driving social media, likes, et cetera, that translates into advertisers. And Donald Trump declared this. He declared this when he was leaving office, and he declared it when he was first running, is that y'all not going to move off of me because I'm too irresistible to you. You mention my name, people tune in. You say you're doing a feature on me, they show up. And so they refuse to ignore the thing in front of them that is the most dangerous, or to properly put it in context when they need to put it in context. Look how quickly they've given up on the idea that we need to be careful about how we frame the stories with Donald Trump because of the lies he's telling. You know, the immediate editorial responding to Donald Trump is basically left to, okay, we'll fact check him after we shoot the interview. That's lazy. And it's also dangerous. And it's one of those things that just makes it that much harder for the American public to disconnect from the reality television Earth 2 version of our politics, from the reality of Earth 1 day in and day out, democratic ideas and principles and values still holding forth as they should. And people are now deciding whether or not those things are of value to them, Reed. And unfortunately, I think there are more and more Americans are deciding not so much because, meh.
Well, I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, let me take the other side of it, you know, from the individual voter's perspective, which is if I have a little more money in my pocket, I have a job, things are going well for me in my neighborhood, my kids are safe, my schools are good, et cetera, et cetera. Then, Michael, what's the worst that can happen if Trump's reelected? I mean, if Biden, if all these good things are happening, but Biden's still this unpopular, then does it even really matter who's president?
Yes. Yes, it matters. Stop playing stupid games with your future. The hell with your future, with your kids' future, with their kids' future. Of course it matters who we elect. It matters whether or not the Justice Department is something you trust. It matters whether or not the rule of law is something we abide by. It matters if it applies to everyone, not just to some of us, that Rick has a better advantage because of his economic situation, or I have a better advantage because of the color of my skin. Those things should matter to the American people if we really believe in this idea of out of many, one. And those things that the founders put in place, despite all the stuff that was going on, breaking from England, setting up slavery, the battles of the initial 13 colonies, what kind of states will we be, all of that stuff, they managed to write one hell of a piece of document that set us on this course. And why are we now looking to tear that up?
But let me ask you this. I mean, e pluribus unum, out of many, one. But don't you think that part of our problem is that now it's out of many, me?
Yeah. Well put.
I mean, that it's like, I've got mine, I'm okay. Those people, it's probably their fault.
But not only that, worse than that, I don't have mine because those people got it. And that's worse. The attitude that I got mine, the hell with everybody else, is one thing. We've dealt with that throughout our history in various forms. But this new attitude of, I don't have mine because of those people. If that's the attitude in 1888, 1890, 1903, I know a whole lot of, put it plainly, a whole lot of white folks who wouldn't be here now because their grandpappy and their great-grandmama wouldn't have been allowed in the country. So you see how these narratives, as we presumably become more enlightened, become more regressive in how we apply them. And so we're looking at each other suspiciously. And this boils back, for me at least, down to the kind of men and women we elevate up as an extension of us. Donald Trump works because Donald Trump is an extension of us. And that is the thing that is the problem. And so it's one of these situations where we're trying to figure out what makes the most sense. How do we hold these values and still move the country forward in which the next generation of individuals who come here can find the same foothold that previous generations found, and that a lot of the things that we had to fight through, civil rights, women's rights, etc., that those fights become less and less contention because we all buy in the position, in the proposition, e pluribus unum, out of many is one nation.
I want to stay within the GOP or what passes for it today. And I want to talk about this idea of the quote-unquote good Republican politician or leader that's left. So last week, Georgia Governor Brian Kemp was asked, if Trump is the nominee, will you support him? And he said yes. In a video launching his U.S. Senate campaign in Michigan, Mike Rogers, former FBI agent, goes on a screed about how the Justice Department can't be trusted. This is a guy who was considered a moderate, right? A regular Republican. We've seen what's happened to Lindsey Graham. I posit, Michael, that sooner than later, the Republican quote-unquote establishment, donor class, whatever, will line up behind Trump, not because they like him, but because they have this thought. We might win with him. We can't win without him.
Well, that's bullshit thinking. you absolutely will lose with them. And you will likely have a better fighting chance of winning without him. Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, Vivek Ramaswamy is your nominee. Well, write that shit off. That's a loser. But if Nikki Haley, Chris Christie, Governor Hutchison, yeah, now you've changed the narrative for the country. Now you've changed the way the country's going to have a conversation. And they're going to be putting up their policies, the policies of this administration, the Biden administration, against proposals that these individuals can rightly make because they've served as governors. They've served in a responsible leadership positions nationally, if you will. So that thinking has extreme limitations to it. And the one reason for me it does is that no one gives a shit what the donor class thinks. They don't care. Remember, the leading donor class candidate was who? You haven't even mentioned his name once since we've been on this podcast. And he was the darling. He was the one everyone was pouring their money into. He was the one the donors wanted. He was going to be a better, well-dressed. His wife was prettier.
He's now 30 points behind Trump in his own home state.
He who shall not be mentioned, right? And we all know we're talking about the governor of Florida. No one's mentioning his name. So no one cares what the donor class thinks in the party because the base has this. I've been trying to warn the party of this for 15, 20 years. This was coming. It was foretold. It was set up by Newt Gingrich in the 1980s. It has played itself out horrendously since then. And you've given power to people who absolutely don't know how to wield it in a way in which you grow the party. And so it's all about retribution, which is Donald Trump's theme. I'm your retribution. So if the people are backing a guy who's telling them, I'm your retribution, what the hell makes you think they're going to back somebody like Chris Christie or Ron DeSantis or Nikki Haley?
Let me talk to something that's, as we're recording this, at the end of the week or Sunday, by all accounts, the federal government will shut down. I want to come back to this idea of two things you said. One is electing these people to do any sort of governing. But two, Kevin McCarthy said something that was so indicative either of his stupidity or his naivete, maybe it's both, wondering why these 20 or so dragons, right, would just want to burn the place down. Like, did he not know what he was doing when he gave in to these people? I have a hard time believing that. I have a hard time believing that he and Jeff Miller, his consigliere, who I've known for a million years, and they go back to high school together, didn't have an understanding of what was going to happen. Ultimately, this butcher's bill was going to come due, right? And now it has come due. That, you know, he got one by him on the debt ceiling because he was willing to go along with it. And, you know, the president and McConnell, they did what they needed to do. But now, right, we're up against a hard deadline. You've got Ukraine funding. You've got impeachment. All of these things. Like, at what point, you know, I saw this headline right before we started recording in Politico. It said, is he going to make a deal to fund the government and end his speakership, or is he going to try and find some way to placate these people? Like, to me, it's a catch-22, Michael. There's no way out.
Yeah, there is no way out. Kevin knew the deal that he was making, the bargain he was making, because he craved the power and the position more than the responsibility. And the responsibility requires something of a leader that at times like this, they look at those who are clamoring around them and they say, shut the hell up and sit down. I give you Nancy Pelosi. Same number, same majority, right? And look what she did. And so the reality of it is leadership essentially is always the difference in whether or not the government operates and functions or the government is on the brink of collapse. And when you value your seat more than federal workers getting a paycheck, retirees getting their check the first of the month, families not being thrown off of food programs, right, as we are about to go into the fall where it gets a little bit colder and the days are longer. If you don't value those things the same way you value your seat or more than you value your seat, this is what you get. So there's no surprise here. What compromise is he going to make? what compromise does he craft with these anarchists that's going to pass the Senate? So if I'm Kevin, I think probably, okay, maybe I just, you say, to hell with it and push through with the Democrats to get the bill, because guess what? They're not going to throw you out. And I almost bet you at the end of the day, they may offer up that vacate position, but they won't have the votes because there won't be enough Republicans who will want to throw him out. No one wants to do that. The national embarrassment is what's happening now. You want to pile on top of that with more? So I think Kevin needs to look at it strategically. Tell your boy that you went to high school with, dude, get a grip. You guys actually have the upper hand here. This is probably politics 201 level, maybe 301 level, but it's certainly not graduate school level politics. This is still early in the game for in terms of strategy. You have the advantage. They don't have the numbers you have. You can parlay success with your Democrats, with the Democrats, because that works to advantage for them too. So what? They get to beat a breast or two and brag about keeping the government open. But guess what? So do you, asshole. I mean, it's not complicated. It's not hard. But when you become beholden to the politics of an idiocracy, this is what it looks like.
Well, it's an interesting point you make, too, because who of those morons is going to run and win?
No one wants the job.
Because you know what? Because here's the thing about, you know, and this is really important. I think we forget about this, is that with authority does come responsibility. You've actually got to do the job. And none of these people actually want to do the job. That's the same thing I said about Trump, which is he didn't expect to win. He didn't think he was going to win. Right. And then when he won, he's like, I got to go do the job. Now, he liked the power and he liked the attention and he liked the money, but he didn't want to do the job. He hated the job. What do you mean? I got to take pictures with the Boy Scouts. I got to do this. I got to do that. But I think that's the other part, too, is that they are anarchists, but they're anarchists who are severely kneecapped by the idea that they're all scared to death of actually having to be responsible, which is, you know, the thing is, you know, we talk about this and you've seen this up close, is the people who are causing the most trouble are not the people who are in competitive districts. They're in the districts that aren't going to lose no matter what. And they're happy to watch everybody else go down. You know why, Michael? Because about your seat, they're going to be there. They're going to be there being rude and saying terrible things and getting videoed, you know, in a theater doing things that you wouldn't want to be seen doing. And, you know, the hypocrisy is like you're standing on principle. You're not. There's no principle here.
We gave up that P word a long time for a new P word. So the reality of it is, we are not that party anymore and have not been for a long time. You know, guys like us have toiled in this space a long time. Some have left. Others, crazy like me, stick around because, not because, you know, I'm hopeful of some, you know, immaculate rehabilitation, but because I know that there are other good souls inside and someone has got to be their Aaron, their Moses, their, you know, to kind of say, all right, we'll just keep going. We're going to keep marching this way, hold up these principles, while at the same time recognizing that there's going to come a point where it all collapses. And then that moment, I think, it's going to be very, very difficult for a lot of people who genuinely believe, oh, this won't happen. Well, it does happen when you select someone to head your party who doesn't care about anything you care about. And his expression of what he thinks you care about is he wants to go beat up people and kill leaders he doesn't like General Milley. Is that really where your heart and your head is? That you'd rather see General Milley executed because he actually tried to keep the country from going down a very, very bad path? I think it's a question a lot of people are going to have to reconcile with themselves. They will not like the answer that they find. And there's just going to be a lot of bodies all over the place when this is all said and done. And
let's hope you're being metaphorical.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Because if it goes wrong, you'll be literal.
Exactly. And I think people need to appreciate that point. I mean, when confronted with the mob, saying they wanted to hang the vice president of the United States, the chief of staff, relayed back to members of Congress, I'm sorry, the president doesn't want to do anything about that. Well, what the hell does that tell you?
All right, I'm going to let you go because I've kept you too long as it is. Tell us one thing that you're taking a look at that the rest of the Lincoln Project community needs to hear.
I'm glad you asked that question. And it may be more than one thing, but it all kind of boils down together. I'm looking at the fact that right now, this election is close to a quarter over, and Donald Trump has the lead. The battle is not the national vote. It has not been for a long time. People like to get off on that and push, oh, you know, we're going to try to get them. No, the battle is going to be down in three or four states in which Donald Trump right now has an advantage. He has an advantage judicially in that they are all working overtime. And you know this, Reed, because you guys are on it, overtime to poison the jury pool in those four jurisdictions where a jury pool will be selected to try Donald Trump. They just need one son of a bitch to say not guilty. Two, it boils down to a handful, no more than five states that will determine who the next president will be. Donald Trump has an advantage at the moment in those states: Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Ohio. No one's looking at the Electoral College count and tracking where those states and how those states are tracking right now. So I'm really concerned about the combination of forces narratively that are shaping how jury pools will look at things and how voters are going to look at things. If I'm looking at a poll a year out that says that 75% of the country thinks the economy sucks and 56% of Americans think that the incumbent president should be fired, what does that tell you?
Well, I can tell you all we do is focus on Electoral College states, because I was arguing, Michael, you can appreciate this, I was arguing with a friend of mine who lives in California, and he's going back and forth with me on all this. And I go, look, you know what? It's a free country for now. Support whoever you want to support. Vote for whoever you want to support. But here's the deal. Your vote, not worried about it. And he goes, well, that's not cool. I'm like, it's not my game, right? They wrote this thing 250 years ago. Like, these are the rules I'm playing by, right? And at the end of the day, Arizona, Nevada, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia, maybe North Carolina, although, Michael, I'll believe it when I see it. Like, this is where it's going to be won or lost. And as I like to say, remember that in 2020, Trump and the Republicans thought they were going to get Bernie Sanders. They didn't. They got Joe Biden. But they ran the Bernie Sanders playbook anyway, and it almost worked.
It almost worked.
It almost worked. So, all right, Michael, before we let you go, where can we find your podcast and where can we find you on social media if you're still dare to be there? And when can we find you on MSNBC?
So I'm weeding myself off of that thing formerly known as Twitter because it's a hellscape. But if you're still playing there, it's at Michael Steele. It's the same on Threads. So doing on Threads at Michael Steele, you can follow the podcast on Twitter and Threads at Steele_podcast. And certainly on my website where you get all that information, michaelsteelenetwork.com.
And as always, gang, you can find me on Twitter or whatever we call it now, at Reed Galen, on Threads and Instagram at Reed_Galen_LP. Michael Steele, always a pleasure.
Thanks again to everyone for listening. Be sure to follow and subscribe to The Lincoln Project on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or however you listen. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review. To connect with us, follow us on Twitter, at Project Lincoln, and for more information on our movement, to join our mailing list, subscribe to our newsletter, or make a contribution to our efforts, visit lincolnproject.us. If you want to message the podcast directly, please send an email to podcast@lincolnproject.us. And if you want to personally join the fight to save our nation's democracy, visit jointheunion.us. For The Lincoln Project, I'm Reed Galen. I'll see you on the next episode.